live, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some arse.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, proudly sponsored this month by the team from the Dolphin Theatre. Head to dolphintheatre.org.nz and check out their latest shows and book tickets. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz, and check us out on Spotify. Tonight we're catching up with the cast from Company Theatre's latest production. We're chatting to the amazingly talented Mel Parsons on the release of her latest album, and we're heading to Wellington to catch up with the fabulous singer-songwriter Marla. But to kick off the show tonight, we want to acknowledge the Arts Foundation's awards presented at Government House this week. They announced the latest official icons into the arts world, which included Anne Robinson, Darcy Nicholas, Witty Iramaya Smiler, and the Top Twins. They also acknowledged the late Morris G, Sir Donald McIntyre, Greer Twiss, Fred Graham, Sir Sam Neill, and Dame Jules Top, whose legacies live on through their work and the impact that they have made on our cultural landscape. So to kick off the show, here's Emma and I's favourite Top Twins number from the Icons, the Top Twins, Untouchable Girls. Good song.
I know. You can't help but groove along to it.
I know. And we're just saying off air there while it was playing, you know, young people these days just don't know the Top Twins. It would be really cool, you know, now they are icons, if our television companies and stuff can sort of rehash some of this stuff.
Maybe they should put it on, like, TV on demand, you know, so if people want to watch it.
They can see it.
They can see it if they want.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You're coughing away. I've just finished weeks of coughing. The old coughs there. Boy, winter's been tough the last few weeks for people.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, is it because we looked after ourselves so much during that time that we don't talk about?
Yeah.
And now the flus just seem to be getting worse and worse and worse?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird.
This one's a tough one. It's a cough. So we've warned our guests. They just need to take over tonight. If Emma and I have a coughing fit, we'll just leave them to it. The lights are red. You're all good, guys. Now, you and I have both seen a few things this week.
Yeah.
We both managed to catch Alice in Wonderland, Anna Harlequin.
We did.
Good fun.
Yeah.
Loved the set.
That set was amazing.
So cool.
So much artificial grass.
Yeah.
Loved
from
it.
All directions. Yeah, really cool. I caught Dolphins Miss Holmes today. And you interviewed them a couple of weeks ago when
yes,
I was sick.
We did.
I was pleasantly surprised by how funny it was. I wasn't, especially Act 2, it's quite comic. It was really well done. Yeah. And again, Dolphin, amazing sets. They use that space so well.
And the costumes look superb too. Well done, Team Wear.
Yeah. You managed to catch one of your students in Macbeth.
I sure did. I got along to ATC's Macbeth on Thursday night. Oh my goodness, what a fabulous show. I said to the guests in the studio before that for someone who was feeling sick and extremely tired, I didn't fall asleep.
Cool.
I just couldn't stop. Like, it was so engaging.
That was fabulous. So cool.
And the set and the treatment of Shakespeare's piece was just superb.
Wow.
So it's still on, so people need to get along.
Yeah, go and support. And then they go to cabaret, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. They're having a big year too.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff happening. And if you've been in Auckland CBD or you're someone like me that lives in an apartment in the city that's also half a hotel, and every time you get into the lift at the moment, there's little children with Mickey Mouse ears. That tells you that Disney must be in town, and it's not the cruise ship, sadly. It is Disney on Ice.
Yes.
And oh my goodness, all you could see yesterday and today in the city is just at every crossing, hundreds of little children that have travelled, and the hotels are full. Like, Auckland is packed. So that's one thing that these big events do bring. They get these people up to Auckland. It's great for our tourism.
And it's a good chance too for people that have gone to Disneyland and paid all that money to have Disney ears to wear for the one day they're at Disneyland. Yeah. They can put them back
on. Put them on again.
Yeah.
And the big opening this week in Auckland CBD was Cartier.
Oh, yeah,
which surprised me. It's been going. But I want to do an arts shout out here because every top busker has worked out that there's crowds. And so we have had some of the best busking in Queen Street all week, all around this beautiful, glamorous Cartier. And not a lot of people in the shop because there's no cruise ships or anything at the moment. So it's a pretty quiet shop. But if you want to catch some amazing buskers, for those that are coming down to just have a look at the shop at the bottom of Queen Street, it's worth a look. It's pretty impressive.
Very cool.
Yeah. So if you win Lotto in the next week, let's go shopping.
Yeah, okay. I'd rather buy a theatre, but okay, sure, Cartier.
Well, delighted now to kick off the show with our fabulous friends from Company Theatre, Reg and Rachel. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Yes.
I don't know where Rachel came from.
Because you said earlier, two R's.
We just need Captain Vellisord. Great to have you here, Reg. What is Company Theatre's latest show?
Our latest show is Les Liaisons Dangereuses, which...
Don't you love how Stephen made you say it?
Yeah, I know.
That was a real pass.
That was a hospital
pass. It was.
If I couldn't say it,
that wasn't
problem.
In the intro either. Yeah.
So say it again.
Les Liaisons Dangereuses, which is a fantastic piece of drama set in... 1780 in pre-revolutionary France. It was a novel of letters written around the same time, so it's lasted for that sort of 250-300 years because of the power of the story. It's a really powerful story, and we're hopefully putting a really good spin on it.
Do you have to practice your French accents?
Fortunately not. It's received pronunciation English.
Oh, great. Okay.
And is there any connection between this and Dangerous Liaisons?
Yes, Dangerous Liaisons was the American film of the adaptation by Christopher Hampton. So Christopher Hampton adapted it for the RSC in the mid-80s. It brought Alan Rickman to prominence. He moved into Die Hard, which is an odd movement from the RSC to Die Hard, but that was his journey into film, was because of this. And Christopher Hampton's adaptation was then made into the film with Glenn Close and John Malkovich and Michelle Pfeiffer introducing Uma Thurman back in the day.
Wow.
Cool. Okay. So, Rebecca, who do you play?
I play Madame de Tourvelle. So she is the sort of moral center of the play. She is a impeccably virtuous woman who, because she is so untouchable, becomes a target or a challenge for the
nice
more dastardly
the opening, yes.
characters.
Okay. And is this a script or story that you followed before, or is this something like brand new that you've picked up here?
No, I knew very little going in. I just sort of thought I'd give it a go, and it's really been really, really fun. It's super mature, really interesting, you know, lots of psychological stuff to think through. It's a really, really compelling story, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen it?
I haven't seen the play, obviously.
No,
I've seen
the movie.
Although I think I don't think I've ever seen it, but we did scenes from it for an assessment, I think, one time for NCA.
Okay.
I think I made students use scenes. Okay. I have a memory of.
Right, okay. And Reg, who do you play?
I'm the director, so I get to...
That's quite an interesting part.
Yes, I get to... Yeah, it's a play about manipulation, and I'm trying not to manipulate my actors too badly, but...
Brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's a fabulous piece of drama.
That's cool. And is this your first time directing for company?
No, this is my third one with company. Okay. Very different other plays. I directed Out of Order last year, which is just a farce. It's fun and it's fast. And before that, Arms and the Man, which is Shaw, and again, it's very funny.
Yeah.
This is, we're trying to find the humour, and there are some really sardonic, funny moments and some good, funny moments in the play. But it is a play that is serious at its heart. It's a fantastic story to follow. There are two people, Rebecca plays one of them, and another young girl who are manipulated by these power
dastardly
players.
Men.
Yeah, well, men and women, to be honest. Mm. They're power players who use seduction and manipulation to gain power within their society.
Now, was this a play that you decided to do, or was this something that Company Theatre said, we want to do this play, and then you got to direct it?
I bought it to Company Theatre because it's a play that's been on my bucket list since I saw it with Alan Rickman 40 years ago, because it's just a fantastic story. And it's a story about today, because the journey that women need to make to achieve the same ends as men is still a challenge, and that is we see that really clearly in the play, and it's still a challenge today, I think. So it's a good story for us to be telling.
Mm. Rebecca, who do you think this will appeal to audience wise who do you think it's targeted at?
I think basically all ages can really access it, but I think it's very much a play for people who would rather sink into and listen to a story as opposed to necessarily just straight spectacle or entertainment. It's a really thoughtful play.
Okay.
Yeah, it's it's about the words and the letters and the relationships, and it's if you're into, you know, your period romances or novels like that, then it'll be, you know, this will be the play for those sorts of people.
Because when's it set?
1780s.
So before Bridgerton.
Yes. Yeah. Well, no, about the same time as Bridgerton, actually, because that's George III-ish. So,
but it is amazing how something like Bridgerton has brought that time to the fore. So plays and musicals, anything set in that time, has now got a slightly different following, because
that's true.
People have seen things like Bridgerton and they kind of get that whole...
Yeah.
Status and the way that it worked in those times.
Absolutely.
We're fascinated by, you know, the sort of social restrictions, especially that women have to go through. And so, yeah, it is really compelling to sort of revisit those time periods.
What do you think's been your biggest challenge as an actor on this one?
That's a really good question. I think it's quite a romantic storyline for my character, which is something that I haven't actually really done before in theatre. And so I think for me it's been really an interesting challenge. How do I navigate expressing romantic love and attraction on stage, and just fully sinking into that and giving it everything?
What about you as a director? What's been the biggest challenge with this script?
The villains are bad people, but Rebecca and I were talking on the way over, they we see the story mostly through their eyes, and so therefore keeping them real and not making them pantomime characters is really important, because they're real people who aren't just bad. They've been driven by their society to act in certain ways and do certain things. And indeed, the male character that Rebecca's character falls in love with destroys himself through his actions, because he genuinely sets out to seduce Rebecca, but in the seduction falls in love with her. But his power won't allow him to see that through. Mm. So he destroys himself and her as a result.
Mm. One of the things I've always been impressed with Company Theatre there at the Rose Centre is your use of the space, because it's not a big stage. And there's been some incredible sets in over the years, and how you use that space. Can you talk about it from a directing point of view of, you know, coming into that space? How did you make this work for you?
Okay, so what we've done is we've gone for... There's a standard grouping of furniture that represents all of our scenes. We're using some clever drapes to indicate which parts of the stage we're using, and they're part of our storytelling. We've widened the stage, so we've pushed. Okay. There's only a false Pross arch at Centre Stage, but Company Theatre, but we've moved it. We've moved the Pross a little bit wider, so we've gained a little bit of space, and we're black on, or we're white on black, so it allows the costumes, because we've got an amazing wardrobe team and an amazing creative team in the hair and makeup department that are doing some fantastic things, and so the sparseness of the set allows the characters to really come even more to life, and it also allows the change of action to not be too jarring, because a table and chairs is used in three different locations, but it doesn't move, so the sparseness allows us to do that.
Right. How many in your show?
10.
10, yeah. Okay. Cool.
Even 10, yeah, on that particular stage is a lot, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, yeah,
but I think, you know, I'm not sure if they're all Company Theatre ones, but like Once on Chanuk Bear,
yep, mm-hmm, that was Company.
Your Cemetery,
yep.
Cemetery Club. Or
I was
Cemetery,
in that, yes.
Both
yeah.
of those instantly hit in my head about just that really good use of space.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. Sometimes it's more a traditional, it's a house set or something, yes. which is a little bit easier. But yeah, those two really stood out for me of great use of space.
Yeah, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
thank
it's
you,
really yeah. cool. How long have you been rehearsing?
We started in July, maybe. Not all that long, actually. It's been a whirlwind few weeks.
Yeah, that's quick and tight.
Yeah, I like to work quick and tight.
Yeah,
it's more fun. Than
just straight in.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Did you have to have your lines down by first rehearsal?
No.
No, he's kind.
They come as you go. You know, yeah. I prefer working that way. I know some of the other actors in the play prefer the other way, and have maybe found it a bit more of a struggle because it's a wordy play,
yeah.
for sure. But you know, we've all got there by tech week. You know, so
yeah.
it's the fast pace. You know, I think helps you to sort of yeah. think on your feet and keep access those lines nice and quick.
And I think in our busy world that we live in now, there was a time that you used to love coming together for 3 months and slowly pulling something together. But actually, we're all so busy. I'd rather go hard and fast, give my all to something, and the older you get, the more the lines are likely to stay in your head if it's hard and fast. Yeah. Where if it's sort of spread out and you come in every couple of weeks, there's a bigger risk there. Yeah, I love it. I was amazed today, Emma, at Miss Holmes was nearly 3 hours at some of the lines she had. That was a long script for
her. Yeah, she talked about that in her interview,
Mama.
About how much she had.
Yeah, yeah, totally own the stage. All right, we'll take a quick music break now, and then we'll find out a little bit more about these guys' arts journey, and when did it kick off, and was it a nativity play? That's what we're going to find out. We love it when you send us music. So Modern has sent in their latest track as part of their latest album. It's called Peace Talks.
Well,
so modern. Peace Talks, keep sending us your tracks, or if you've heard a good Kiwi track that you'd like us to play, or perhaps something from overseas you want us to plug, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. And if you are a music distributor, don't forget to get in touch. And a big thank you to the team from Nick Knack Media and Little Sister who have sent us lots in for tonight and the next few weeks. We love it. Keep them coming. All right, back to Company Theatre now. And Reg, take us back. When did the arts first kick off for you?
If I go back to my earliest memory, yep. I was at a pantomime where, crazy story, the Wicked Queen came on and she was booed. And in my memory, it was about 10 minutes. It was probably not. Oh. But in my memory, it was electric. And she would look at the audience. She hadn't done anything. And I thought, that's what I want.
Was this in the UK?
That was in the UK, yeah.
They just do panto, so
yeah. Yeah, so I was 7 or 8, yeah. I think.
And did you want to be the witch?
I just wanted to have that power, because that was immense. Cool. And the absolute bizarre thing of all was 30 years later, I moved in next door to her, and I didn't know until her husband showed me a picture.
Oh, how funny.
I thought you were going to say you didn't know until you heard her cackle.
She didn't cackle, unfortunately. That was my journey in.
Yeah, okay. And so then did you sort of go down the acting path first?
Yeah, I went down the acting path a bit and did some voiceover stuff.
Yep.
And, did some acting in the UK, mostly stage, and then found that actually eating was something that was important, so...
Yeah.
You moved into a bit more of the community theatre, but yeah, I've done my share.
Nice. Do you have a favourite role that you've played that you'd play again if someone asked you to do it?
Quite like to play Frank again in Educating Rita.
Ah.
I did that at the Vic 12 years ago.
Wow.
With a fantastic actress called Paige Nichols. And
yeah.
I'd love... It's a good part because Frank can be... my age then, my age now, he can be it because he's a professor.
And
it's not a love story, it's a beautiful story. Yeah. So yeah, if I could do Educating Rita again, that would be really good fun.
Nice, okay, cool. And when did you sort of start moving into the directing side of things?
That kind of happened at the end of being in the UK. I moved over about 25 years ago, and towards the end, I found myself with directors, and I'm thinking, I wouldn't do it that way. And my very talented and beautiful wife said, maybe you should be doing it yourself then.
Mm-hmm.
And put your money where your mouth is.
You're nice.
And that was the start of my journey. And I did some musicals, luckily, and then did some plays. And, yeah, it's been fantastic for me.
And do you find now that you like to flip between the two, acting and directing?
Yeah. So I was in Cemetery Club with Company last year, and that was great fun. And if you've got a great director, it's good fun to tread the boards again. And you've got to be passionate about the plays that you direct.
Yeah.
I don't think I could direct something because somebody asked me if I didn't have the same level of passion for it. Because the energy and the vision has to come from you.
Oh, totally. Totally. And we give up a lot of time as directors, so you want to be passionate about it. Yeah. It's all the stuff that the cast don't see that you do behind the scenes
Absolutely.
To get to that rehearsal day. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, Rebecca, take us back. You've probably told us before because you've been on before, but
I don't remember what I said last time.
Oh, good. Well, you can make it up. You could compare a peer podcast and see.
Yeah.
So when did it all kick off for you?
Well, I always loved playing pretend. That was all I did as a kid. And I sort of figured out at a young age that actors are people who get to keep doing that while they're adults. And I just knew that's what I wanted to do. I was in like a school play at primary school and got the lead part, which was really fun. And I always wanted to do it. I couldn't wait till I could get to high school and start doing NCA drama. Just, you know, I just always loved playing pretend, and that's still to this day, that's what I love about it.
And did you then sort of venture down the community theatre path after leaving school?
Yeah, I actually did some while I was still in school. I started doing Shakespeare in the Park and things like that. Yeah, and then I moved away from Auckland to go to uni and study theatre. I studied at Victoria.
Okay.
Yeah, and then since coming back to Auckland, just it's been really nice to jump back into that community theatre scene. It's just such a lovely place to be.
Mm. Talk us through your time at Victoria. What was sort of, I guess, a couple of key takeaways from that experience that you're now using today, say, in a show like this one?
Oh, wow, yeah. One of the biggest things I learnt while studying was, and it was kind of a wake-up call, was as an actor, it's not about you, it's about the audience. And I think that was the best piece of advice I got, because actually it's not about, am I enjoying myself performing what I want to do? It's about, is it speaking to somebody? Is the audience liking it? It might even be about, are they buying tickets? And that's putting outside yourself and seeing things from that way, it makes you a better performer, I think. Yeah, that's definitely the biggest lesson. And I also, while I was there, I was also studying classics. So I got to learn a lot about ancient theatre and sort of the beginning of acting as we know it, and really see things from that perspective, and realize that people's attitudes towards stories being told about acting have been honestly the same for a really long time, and that's fascinating.
Where do you want to take it next, your studies? What's the goals?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'm kind of in a phase of life where I'm just sort of seeing where things take me, you know, doing the occasional play that interests me, but not necessarily putting too much pressure on it at the moment. I would maybe like to study again in future, but yeah, we'll see.
And do you have a passion to perhaps one day direct as well?
I have directed a play once before. I did Medea when I was in Wellington for the Victoria Ancient Theatre Society, which was super fun because I also got to help translating it from Latin.
Wow.
Before putting it to the stage, so that was really fun. And I would love to direct again.
I love that it's fun to translate from Latin.
No.
It's so fun.
She's smart.
It's like my favourite thing to do.
Yeah.
Apart from acting.
That's cool. If a producer walked in the door and offered you a dream role, what would it be? Can be in a musical, a play, a film, even if it's like so impossible you'd never get it, but right now you're going, oh, but I would do that.
Yeah.
You'd drop everything.
I think it's... I would love to be John Lawrence in Hamilton. I've always really loved the idea of doing that.
Yeah.
Look, men get better parts, and some of them are just seem so fun, and I'd love to. Or if someone offered for me to do Hamlet in a heartbeat, I'd say yes. Like those sort of
the actual role of Hamlet,
Yeah, wow. Those kinds of things that girls don't get to do. I would wish for somebody to ask me to do stuff like that.
You need to. That is a good way to direct, though. Maybe find someone that's prepared to
produce the
producing of a gender bender version.
Yeah, maybe.
That's awesome. Do you know, you may not, Reg, I'm not sure your association with company theatre, but how do they choose their shows each year? Do they go out to the directors and then that they choose and nominate the shows, or does the committee sit down and go, these are the shows we want, let's see who's interested? Like, what's their process?
It's a bit of a balance.
Yep.
People will approach company and say, hey, I've got an idea. Often it will be people that company have worked with before, but they're really open. We have to judge the audience that we have and the audience that we're playing to. Rebecca and I were talking about a couple of plays that probably aren't for the theatre that we're working in at the moment. But, yeah, so they're pretty open, and it's about a balance. So this season we started with Chanuk Beer, which is a really important New Zealand story. We've moved into Les Liaisons, which is a really good story with fantastic parts for women, Rebecca.
Oh,
and
yeah.
and then we finish with The Lady in the Van, which is
lovely.
And that's exactly so it's quite a balanced piece of a season. So.
Because you're very similar to the Dolphin in that sense of you've got your regular audience, your regular crowd. I mean, I was looking at the audience today. I don't think I've ever been to a Dolphin show that's not three quarters full.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it is just that following.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The play we're doing at the moment challenges some of our demographic and maybe some of the matinee audiences. It's not automatically appealing to, which is a real shame because it's such a good story.
But then again, it could appeal to people that haven't traditionally, say, come to the shore to see it, who then, if they enjoy it, will go, what's company's next show?
Exactly.
So, yeah, you've got to have that balance, in your year to pull new people in. Because, you know, your audiences eventually get older and don't come to the theatre.
Exactly.
So you've got to keep that cycle happening.
I was actually really surprised this week going to Macbeth how many young people were there for... It was actually extremely gruesome, you know, and there was a lot of young kids. And I was like, wow, those parents are really training their kids into theatre early. Yeah.
Amazing. What's next on the horizon for you both when this show packs up? Is there anything else on the plans?
I'm getting married, so that's my focus after this.
God, exciting.
I know.
Exciting. All right, let's move to that part. Sorry, Reg, you're done. Getting married, whereabouts?
I'm up in Matakana.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so how far in the wedding planning are we? Are we feeling comfortable?
Oh, it's a bit of a marathon, but slowly getting there, slowly ticking things off the list, yeah.
My daughter was just saying that yesterday she did a bridal practice. She's a bridesmaid for a wedding, and they were in a gown company, and they all had glasses of champagne and paddles of 1 to 10, and like the poor bride would try a dress on, come out, and they all had to score it. This is how the actual bridal place set it up.
Wow.
Jamie said it was actually quite brutal. And the more champagne that they drank, of course, your score was changed. So I don't know how fair it was. So have you chosen your dress? Because if not, we can give you this place's address.
No, I have. I have chosen one. Yeah, I got a vintage dress, which is very... very nice, yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, all the best for that. That's a good next thing on the list. Anything theatrical, although a wedding can be pretty theatrical at times, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, it is a little bit like a theatrical production.
You need a stage
manager.
In the
planning stages.
Yeah.
Nothing firm yet, but maybe we've been talking about another play that Reg is interested in doing, so we'll see where that goes.
Cool. All right. Well, Reg is already married, so no wedding coming up. What have you got?
I've got maybe 4 or 5 plays in my head that I can't really talk too much about because none of them will come to fruition if I start talking about them. But yeah, there's always stories to tell, and I think that's the great thing about theatre is there's always stories to tell, and it's picking the right people and the right place and the right time.
Yeah.
So hopefully something next year. I haven't really honed it down yet. It's very exciting. Hopefully maybe act again next year. That would be fun.
Nice. Rebecca, we get this time of the year, you get people auditioning for performing arts schools, choosing their colleges, etc. What advice would you give to a young person listening? We have a lot of young actors that listen sort of in their high school final year, thinking about, you know, like you said, Victoria and Wellington and these other courses. What advice would you give someone who's trying to work out that journey?
I would maybe say... take your time, but like maybe take a year or so, think about it, if you're wanting to go to an acting school, hit it when you're maybe a bit older, because those experiences at acting schools can be quite psychologically difficult. And I think the older you are, the better you maybe go through those sorts of things. But also, I'm always going to recommend, you know, study more than one thing. I hate the idea of being boxed into one career path, so if you do the broad study that lets you, you know, do acting but also something else, you know, then you've always got options. You can always act, you can always do your other thing, you know.
So many 18-year-olds are so excited to just leave school, jump straight into a performing arts school, but as actors, we draw from our own life experiences, don't
exactly.
we? You know, we're playing those different roles. We've got to have that thing that pulls us, whether it's an emotional thing or a moment where someone's passed. Or so if you haven't had all that life experience, it's hard. It's tough.
Yeah.
And your whole experience, you moved down there, you did the whole uni halls type thing?
I did, yeah. I went in a hall in the first year and then started flatting, yeah.
That is kind of cool. So cool. All right, Reg, for anyone that's just tuned in, now you get the 2-minute plug. Remind us all about the show, the content, where people can get tickets, when it's on, and just recap that story.
Okay, so it's Les Liaisons Dangereuses. That's at the Rose Centre for Company Theatre. iTicket have the tickets. It opens next weekend on the 15th, runs through to the 29th. It's already selling, so move fast. It's a fantastic story. I've got a cast of fantastic, fantastic actors. I can't tell you how good a team they are. And that's the most important thing, because from the person playing the major domo, who says not a word, right the way through to Michael and Susie, who are playing the leads with a lot of words, it's a whole team. And it's seamless, and it's really exciting.
I could not play a role where I didn't get to speak the whole time.
No, you couldn't.
I'd want to make a noise or something.
That is absolutely brilliant. Did you have a rehearsal today?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Well, thank you so much for coming on to Kick Arts on a Sunday night after a day of rehearsals.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. I'll be coming along to check it out and support you. All the best. Head to iticket.co.nz. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Awesome to have you. We're going to catch up with the fabulous Mel Parsons next. And while we get her on the line, here is one of her latest tracks from the album called Be Here Now. fabulous Mel Parsons, award-winning singer-songwriter, and she's joining us on the line now. Good evening, Mel.
Good evening.
Great to have you here on Kick Arts. You are being very busy at the moment.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It is a bit of a busy patch, but, yeah. You know, busy's good, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, before we talk about your latest album, Busyness, for our listeners, I want you to take us right back. When did music first kick off for you?
Well, I put my first record out in 2009, and before that I'd been sort of doing music all the way through, so I studied music straight out of high school, and I've sort of always played, so it sort of eventually turned into a career, which was very lucky for me.
And this is your seventh album?
Yes, it is my seventh album, yes, yep. Quite right. Yeah, that says quite. It seems crazy. I'd blink and suddenly they've got seven records out.
And when you look back over those, can you hear your sound change? Like, has your music? I don't want to say the word matured, because sometimes it's not matured. It's just changed as our life changes. Do you hear that difference?
I think there's probably certain elements of it that have changed for sure. I mean, hopefully, you sort of always hope that your development means, you know, that you're writing better songs or whatever, but I think, yeah, it's just such a tricky one, isn't it? I feel like probably there's the common thread that runs through all of them, which is obviously my voice and my kind of you know, songwriting sensibility. So I'd say yes and no. I can hear it and I can't hear it. Yeah.
When you look back over those, you know, seven albums and things, what's some of those highlight moments for you that you, you know, the moments that you would talk about when you win your Grammy?
When I won, thank you.
You've got to put it out there. You've got to put it out to the universe.
I love it. I think, it's so hard to boil down to little moments, but I think, I mean, for me, I've been very, very lucky with my career to be able to tour overseas quite a lot. And, you know, I've had some amazing adventures because of that, and just sort of, you know, ending up in places that you would, you know, you'd never go to, you know, and then suddenly you're in, you know, somewhere in the Netherlands, or you're in a random little spot in Germany, or, you know, you're in Ireland in a little pub somewhere. I feel like it's sort of hard to boil down to any moment, but I think... Yeah, probably the touring side of it has been my, you know, the favourite part, and that's where I get to meet, you know, I get to meet all sorts of amazing people that I probably wouldn't have otherwise met, you know. So, yeah, it's been really great for that, for sure.
And you've opened for a lot of amazing people as well. Who's probably, like, who's the most memorable person that you've opened for?
Yeah, I have. I've been very lucky to get a lot of quite high-profile supports in recent years, and... I mean, the pinnacle has to be Crowded House, and we toured with them on their Gravity Stairs tour around arenas around the country, which was pretty phenomenal, you know. What sort of masterclass watching Neil Finn every night. And that one was, you know, I'm a huge, huge fan of the band, and, you know, as is everyone else in the world. And so that one was a very, very special one. But, yeah, I've, you know, played support for lots of great people. Chris Isaak, the Teskey Brothers we toured with, who were really cool. Train, actually, funnily enough, which, yeah, they were... Yeah, it's really neat to meet, I think, those people who, you know, especially really high-profile people that you're sort of initially, like, a bit intimidated by, and then you meet them backstage and they're just normal people and lovely, you know, by and large, just really lovely, kind people. And, yeah, it's really heartening, actually, how supportive that side of it all is.
So take us through Castle Hill now, your latest album. What's the, sort of the inspiration, I guess, or the stories behind this album?
Yeah, I mean, Castle Hill, so we recorded it, the name of the record actually comes from, there's nothing too deep and meaningful about the name. The name was from, we literally recorded it at Castle Hill in a lodge up there in the Southern Alps outside of Christchurch. And so we went full immersion, went and hired out a lodge and set up a studio there.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was just such a great... It was a great vibe, a great... You know, it's a really... I highly recommend that way to make records. But the songs, it's a real mixture of the songs. You know, I sort of don't usually have any tidy themes of, you know, this album is about XYZ or something specific. It's kind of a mixture of, you know, my life now and my life before and, you know, or certain something that inspired me at a particular moment, you know. So there's a whole lot of different things on there for sure.
Do you have a specific process for writing music? Like, we've talked to artists that, you know, pull over the car because they're driving, they've had that moment, they quickly sing it into a voice memo. Are you one of those and then kind of pull it out? You are? Cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's fun. It's a strange thing. I feel like lots of writers have that thing.
Yeah.
There's something about driving. I mean, it's quite a mundane thing, driving, isn't it? But I think there's something about it that your brain just goes into a certain state that maybe, you know, makes ideas come a bit freer. So, yeah, I definitely have done that as the quick pull over on the side of the road and record a, you know, little voice memo. But, generally my process is pretty, it's usually very solitary, so it's usually just me and a guitar or piano and sit it showing up, basically. And I kind of feel like writing is a little bit like, I kind of use the metaphor of like gold mining or gold panning or something, you know, like you've got to turn up and just really sieve through all the sand to get to the, you know, to get to the little gems that you're trying to find. Mm. So for me, I try to just sort of go stream of consciousness and see, and then pick back through, find out what I like and then sort of follow those veins, really. But yeah, I've definitely learned to not be too critical too early on. You need to be really critical further down the track, but I think in that initial, and in the first stage of writing is just very much unjudgmental, kind of, you know, whatever comes out, we'll see where it goes, you know. Sometimes it goes nowhere and, you know, sometimes it's just rubbish and other times it's like, oh, there's a little sound I like, I'll follow that and see where it ends up.
And I love in your press release how you've said about how, you know, you booked a band but had no finished songs, so you clearly work well under pressure as well.
Yes, well, that's the thing, guys. I've always been like that, and that I need a deadline. You know, if without a deadline, I would probably never finish a song. You know, because it's I find it really hard. You know, like it's so much easier to sort of get, you know, you get partway through and you're like, yeah, that's pretty good, or you know, I'm stuck at that bit, so I'll just sort of walk away. You know, but as soon as you've got a deadline, then you're like, right, well, I've got to really stick with it. So I think that, yeah, I definitely need a hard.
You need the pressure. Yeah. And are you in words before music or music before words, or just quite often it all come together?
Yeah, a bit of a mix, actually. That's okay. A good question. I will often have, like, I'll have a notebook or and just like little writing scraps on my phone that I, you know, little ideas that I have. But then also I sometimes I do it with the guitar around the other way. So it just, yeah, it's sometimes lyrics first, sometimes it's music. It just kind of just depends on the session, yeah.
That's cool. Who's inspired you? Like, when you look back over your music journey, whether that's, or probably both, musically, the music you've listened to that's inspired you, or perhaps people that have helped you on your journey?
Yeah, I've had, I mean, so much. Like, you know, I grew up listening to the really classic songwriters, you know, your Cat Stevens and Paul Simon and Mark Knopfler. I'm a huge, huge fan of Mark Knopfler. I have been since I was a tiny kid, and I still, you know, he's still my number one, you know, now. So, and then people like, I listened to, when I was growing up, I listened to a lot of Tracy Chapman and Sinead O'Connor, and people like that were very formative for me. And then, in terms of you know, inspiring and helpful, inspiring people like Don McGlashan really got behind me very early in my career. In fact, before I'd even put out anything, he told me that I had great songs, and that alone probably was one of the things that it was just having someone, you know, that revered to, you know, say to you, hey, I think what you're doing is really cool. I think you should stick with it. You know, like, that's a huge boost. And, so people, I've had been, you know, people like David Long, and I've had, a lot of great help and support along the way, which is, very lucky and cool. And now I sort of feel like I'm far enough down the line that I try and help, you know, if there's any young songwriters that come to me, I always try and, you know, help them out, or you know, even just meet up for coffee and, you know, see if there's anything I can, anything I can do, yeah.
Well, that's a perfect segue to my next question. If, you know, we do get a lot of artists, I mean, our next artist on the show tonight is relatively new to the music industry, just releasing their first track-by-track moment. You know, what's your advice to somebody that's listening that is just at that early stage, they've got that first one out, and then they're like, oh, what next?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, actually, and I feel like, I think the big thing is to just go with your, and I mean, I guess this is not at all specific to music either, is just to really go with your gut. And I think you, like early on in my career, there were times when I remember thinking, I want to make a single that, you know, this radio station will play or these people will like. And as soon as you go down that track of, you know, trying to please other people, I think that's where you fall down. So I think that would be one piece of advice, would be just to always write what pleases yourself and what you really, really like and what you believe in, because then you know that it's going to be authentic, and it's the authentic stuff that connects with people. I think just keep going. I mean, I feel like part of my sort of, you know, career secret or something has literally been just that I just keep doing it, you know?
Mel's advice, book a band in a studio and that's your deadline. Yeah, make it happen.
Yeah, that's right. Just force yourself to do it. I think that would actually be one other thing that I would say to young artists, is that you get really hung up early on on things being perfect and all the conditions being perfect and meeting the exact right people at the right time and things. And the reality is that it's never going to be finished. It's never going to be perfect. And so at a certain point, you just have to go, hey, you know what, this is it, and I'm going to push on and, you know, and just keep going. Otherwise, you can just get totally tangled up in, you know, in your head and then never end up putting anything out, you know?
All right, we're going to play your latest track now, and then we'll talk about your tour coming up. So tell us about Clean Slate that came out this week.
Yeah, Clean Slate's kind of one of the heavier songs on the album, and it's a bit of an exploration of pretty deep grief, really. And I think, I feel like, you know, which everyone has at some stage or other in their life. And so this is kind of, I guess this is my take on that.
Nice. All right, well, stay on the line and then we'll talk about your tour coming up. But let's have a listen to Clean Slate.
Clean Slate is a terrible gift. I mean, what am I meant to do with this? I can't hear you laughing anymore. So sad I can't even listen to the radio. 'Cause everything reminds me of your soul. I don't know what to do with this empty space. I don't wanna feel it. I don't wanna feel it. slate is a terrible gift. I mean, what am I meant to do with this? If I can't hear you laughing anymore, so sad I can't even listen to the radio. 'Cause everything reminds me of your song.
A beautiful track, Mel. Beautiful track, Clean Slate.
Oh, thanks so much.
You've got such a... I'm not a music person, but there's a lovely round richness to the sound, Emma. What would you... You're the music expert.
I'm the music expert, thanks.
There's a depth to it.
There definitely is. But as you said, Mel, it's come from a place of, you know, of lived experience, and so I think that really makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think you can sort of hear. I think you can hear the in music. I think you can hear when it's you know, authentic and vulnerable. Mm. Hopefully, I mean that's sort of one of my goals, I guess, is just to reach people with it. Hopefully it does that. Yeah,
I could definitely feel myself wrapped up in front of a fireplace, glass of something in my hand, and just listening to that. That would be great.
Ah, cool! Yay.
Awesome. Now, you've got a tour coming up, and is this just playing songs from Castle Hill, or are you bringing back some of your other music as well?
Yeah, so we'll be playing two sets. So we'll play the whole of the new record, and then we'll play a mix of old faves and past hits.
Ah, love it.
So bit of a mix up there, which will be great fun. But we're playing beautiful. I'm not sure if you've seen the run, but all the venues are amazing. They're all beautiful theatres, and yeah,
it's full on. You've got a couple of busy weeks. I mean, you kick off on the 27th of August at Theatre Royal in Nelson, then heading to Christchurch to the Isaac Theatre Royal the next day. Very next day, you're in Dunedin at the Glenroy Auditorium. You've given yourself a few days off to recover heading up to the North Island, playing at Clarence Street Theatre in Hamilton on September the 3rd, then the beautiful Q Theatre here in Auckland on September the 4th. Then you whiz back to the Opera House in Wellington on the 5th and Globe Theatre in Palmerston North on the 6th. I hope you've got a good roadie team.
I love that.
I do.
And I love that you're playing in theatres rather than kind of iconic music, you know.
Yeah.
It makes it feel a bit theatrical.
Yeah, exactly. And there's something about, I mean, you know, all of those venues have got, they've got so much vibe in them already. Mm. And I love... I love a comfy theatre seat myself as a music fan, as a punter. I love going to shows there, you know. So it's, I think I try to consider the audience and I think it just elevates it just a little bit more as well.
But also, as Emma just said, you know, I could see ourselves sitting at any of those theatres with a nice glass of red wine enjoying that music. Like, it is that vibe to just sit, relax and be taken away by you and your team, you know.
We
should acknowledge that you've got some funding from New Zealand on here, and the New Zealand Music Commission, and our friends at 95BFM are looking after your Q Theatre Auckland slot. So good to see that you're getting support. Do you find yourself in this industry sort of living on the social media and the data and looking to see, you know, which tracks are playing more, and how much do you personally deep dive into that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fully self-managed, so I'm all about it. I have to kind of be across all that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, so I do from a sort of business perspective and just kind of keeping tabs on things. But it's a funny thing. You really, as a solo artist, you have to have two quite distinct hats, you know. Like, there's obviously the running of the ship, and, you know, I've got a great team and lots of people that you know, help me put it all together. But then, and then there's the creative side, which is completely different, you know. So I have to sort of leave one, you know, get into one world and then hop out of that, and then get in the other world and forget about the, you know, once we're on stage or when I'm writing, I've just completely leave all that stuff, you know, aside. So, yeah, it's quite a, I guess that's one really cool thing about this as a career, you know, it's always really varied and it's relentless, but you know, I love that about it.
Brilliant. All right, where can people support you, get tickets or find out more about your tour or download your music so that it's the best for you?
I mean, the best place is just my website, which is melparsons.com. The tour, all of the tour info is up there, and that's also at plusone.co.nz for all tour info. And then there's actually a new music service. There's obviously all of your Spotify's and your Bandcamps and all of those side of things for vinyl and CDs and things, but there's also a new music service called Loom. Which is a really cool new digital kind of world of the album, which is really, it's a new Kiwi startup, and so Castle Hill's actually up on there, which is really exciting to see how they go. It sort of has a whole lot of behind the scenes stuff, and yeah, it's just a new, it's sort of digital but without the sort of throwawayness of the streaming kind of era, I suppose. It's a lot more kind of, you know, direct artist-to-fan Great. Side of things. But, yeah, people should check Loom out, L-U-M-E, if they're interested.
Yeah, brilliant. Awesome. Hey, thank you, Mel, for giving up time late on a Sunday night to come and chat to us.
Oh, great pleasure. Thanks so much for your thoughtful questions. It's been lovely to chat.
Anytime. We'll look forward to hearing from you when you have your next album out, when you've booked that awesome band. Let us know when you've booked the band so that yes. we can do the countdown. Hey, Mel's booked it. She's got 3 weeks to release her album. We could do a live countdown like telethon.
Yeah.
Counting down to the final moments.
People could pay you to get a certain amount of lines done in a certain amount of time.
Yeah, look, we could be your sponsors.
You guys are on the marketing team. You just hired yourself.
Brilliant.
That's awesome.
Love it. We're going to end the interview with Caravan. Anything special about this track that you want to say before I hit play?
Caravan is childhood nostalgia, yeah. Basically. Yeah, that's the vibe for that one. Yeah.
Brilliant. All right, we'll end with Caravan. Thanks so much, awesome. Mel. Go and support
Great
her.
To chat.
Go and book and go along to one of the concerts and see Mel live. Here is Caravan.
Summertime.
Parsons. Caravan, each song, quite a different sound, eh?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Really cool. What a great person to chat with. Certainly come a long way in a short space of time.
Mm.
Now, we switch now to an up-and-coming artist that you have caught up with, someone that's been on the show in the past, and that's Marla.
Yeah, no, it was really nice catching up with them. She is currently studying commercial music at Massey in Wellington. And, loving her time there.
So before we play the interview, which we pre-recorded during the week because she is busy studying down there, we're going to play her original track from the Play It Strange competition, which is the Youth Town songwriting competition. She released her song there called Crossroads. So we'll have a listen to that and then we'll play the interview. Take a listen.
There's a hole in the middle of the world. I've had many dreams about, and the sun filters through the ancient bars, and the neighbors tell me tales after they
Now, let's take us over to your interview this week.
Now, joining us on Kick Arts is a return guest. And last time we spoke to Marla, she was still finishing off year 13 at Waketebu High School. And now she's, 8 months through? No, 6 months through a course in Wellington. Kia ora, Marla. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So tell us, first of all, where are you and what are you doing at the moment?
Well, I'm studying at Massey in Wellington and I'm studying commercial music.
So when you say commercial music, what does that course kind of look like?
So my major is actually practice, so I'm doing a lot of like writing, recording, performing. It's kind of like what I do in my own time, like in a course.
Does that mean though that you get free access to studios because it's part of your coursework?
Yes, it actually does. That is like the best part about my school, I think. You get complete full reign access and studios are amazing.
Because I was going to say, how much for young musicians out there that usually record in their bedrooms, how much is it to go into a recording studio?
Usually it's like around $1,000 per day in New Zealand. So it's really cool to have just free studios that are really good here.
How do you find it? Again, being on a course, I suppose you've got set points where you have to produce stuff. Does that put pressure on you as a writer to write to their time rather than in your own time? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does a little bit, but I kind of like it because I feel like it does give me a good sort of motivation to actually get it done, because writing and just art in general can be such like I'm not really in the mood for it today. But it kind of gives you like a structure and makes you do it, you know?
Yeah. So describe to our listeners, how would you describe your music sound?
Okay, well, I think the song I'm releasing on the 14th is quite pop, rock, indie. It has a lot of different elements, I feel like, in it, which isn't actually my like usual sound that I'm writing at the moment, but I love the sort of vibe that the song is. It's really upbeat and cool.
So where does your motivation for songs generally come from, or your inspiration?
I literally just write from exactly my feelings and like my life experiences and whatever's happening to me in that moment. I just sit down and write a song about it. It's kind of like the best way to cope with things for me.
And is it a combination of lyrics and melody, or do you do one first and then the other? How do you work? What's your process?
I actually, like, my process changes all the time. I feel like sometimes I pick up the guitar first, sometimes I write the lyrics first, sometimes I sing a melody first, and it kind of depends, because I could just get a song idea in the middle of the street, or I could purposely sit down to write the song that I feel like I need to get out of my head. But I think I prefer like writing lyrics and then putting them into songs, because I feel like they become more intentional.
And is it predominantly guitar, or do you play the keyboard as well?
I have never really taken piano lessons. I don't really play the piano, but I do write on it sometimes, because I feel like it is a very different, my songs on the piano sound very different to guitar. So I do write on it, but I'm not very good.
So you're coming up to releasing a new single. What does that mean for an artist who wants to release a single? What extra mahi do you have to do to release a single?
Well, there's a lot of kind of networking and obviously trying to promote your single. So trying to get radio interviews and trying to get people to play your song. There's a lot of social media marketing that goes into it, and I'm still trying to kind of get the vibes of how to actually promote songs, but I feel like the more I release, the more I learn about it.
And I've seen lots of posts lately from you with encouraging people to pre-save. What does that mean? Does that mean that you basically, as soon as it comes out, they're going to get it straight on their Spotify, or what does that mean?
So that means that, yeah, so they pre-save the song, and it, the day that the song releases, it goes straight onto their library on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever. But it actually, the reason I ask people to pre-save is because when Spotify sees that lots of people have pre-saved your songs, they're more likely to put your song into like an editorial playlist or boost it a little bit more, because they know that it's like wanted.
Cool. So we should be encouraging any of our listeners on KickArts to jump over to and pre-save your new track.
Yes, definitely. Please, that would be great.
So tell us a little bit about this song. What is the vibe of this song? You've told us about kind of the sound, but what's it all about?
Well, it's a story from when I was 15, which is crazy. I wrote the song probably 2 years ago. It was basically, I liked a boy, he didn't like me, and that was what the song was about. But I kind of based it around this whole story of a very particular night, and I literally say detail for detail what happened, and that's why I love it, because it's so honest. And I was always scared to like play it when I was younger, but now that I'm older, I'm like, that's so cool that I just felt like I could actually write this whole thing, and it completely made me feel better about the situation. So it's actually really cool.
What if this boy hears it? Will he know it's him?
Probably. Yeah, but I feel like it's okay. I don't really care, honestly.
Imagine if he suddenly rings you and is like, Marla, so that song, is that about me?
No, it's okay. I feel like I've written songs about so many people, and I make it so obvious always that they know it's always about them. So if I have ever been liked or been anything with someone, I've kind of written a song about it no matter what, and I feel like that's just to be expected.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
Now tell me, when you were at high school, you were quite a big part of, you know, Rock Quest and Play It Strange and all those kind of competitions. Again, for our younger listeners, did they set you up well for leaving school and going into kind of training in this industry, do you think?
Yes, I think that that was a really good way, when I was younger especially, to get my confidence up a bit. And I think that the whole experience, especially with Play It Strange, or in Rock Quest, but Play It Strange with the studios, and like if you are a finalist, you get to go and record your song. I think that was my favorite thing ever, because obviously recording songs, like we were saying before, is so expensive, and that's why I love the fact that they just give you kind of this money and you can do whatever you want with the song, and they give you complete creative control, and it's really cool.
Awesome. All right, well, how can people find out more about you, listen to your songs, follow you, etc.?
Well, on Instagram and TikTok, my username is Marla Music, and yeah, I have basically everything about my songs, about me, everything is on there, and I post all the time, so you won't be missing much.
So before we play this new track, one, people jump on and pre-save this track. Two, I saw a post from Where's Jai saying that they were looking for New Zealand openers, and I saw a little comment underneath from you saying that you would love to open them. I think we all need to jump on to Where's Jai and say, Marla should open for you. So let's get behind Marla and help her get some things to happen. So pre-save, encourage Where's Jai to use her as an opener. But most of all, listen in now, because we're about to hear her new single. How about you introduce it here on KickArts for us?
Hi, I'm Marla, and this is my song Deadlight that's coming out on the 14th of August, and you're listening to it for the first time on KickArts.
On the grass alone, a feeling like I've never known.
Fantastic. You can hear that difference you were just saying.
Off yeah. Amazing.
Hey, we're out of time. Remember, you can email us info@kickarts.org.nz, and everyone we've talked to, check them out on our bulletins page on our website, kickarts.org.nz. We started by honouring the Top Twins, new icons. Let's end with their track called Songs of Home. Have a fabulous week and make sure you
kick some arts.
Land far across the ocean, it seems to be calling my name. It's my homeland, my homeland, New Zealand. I miss her wherever I roam. The songs that I
brush your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 let's go kick some R.